Accession number 29077, Reel 6.
Generally speaking, but if there were any problems, they all ate whatever they was going, and we never had any trouble whatsoever in the Mohammedan and mixing with the Hindu. Most of the Viceroy commissioned officers were Mohammedan. They never had any trouble with. They weren't all Muslims, but some of them, majority were, because the Muslim was more the fighting man than the Hindu in the Indian Army, and the Sikhs generally were more intelligent. They were probably a select body, I think. And they were in the engineering side, in the workshop side. The Sikhs would be doing that, because they had probably been better educated, and they seemed to have more intelligence than the general Indian sepoy. So the southern Indian, the Christian, he would be perhaps only one or two of those in the unit at the most. They ate whatever was going. So did most of us, actually.
To what extent did you have to exert discipline or punish your soldiers?
You did from time to time. You have one or two that would go berserk, or I don't know. Not terribly viciously, but they might drink too much, or they might start fighting. They might have a dispute amongst themselves. And you had to sort these sort of things out. But the majority of the problems would have been family problems. They'd get a letter from home, and letters came in very infrequently, really. They'd get a letter from home written by the scribe in the village, because none of them could write themselves, saying probably they wanted money or something, or they wanted them to come back and and they would make up some story that their parents were ill and this sort of thing, and then they would come and ask for leave to go back and see what was the trouble. Well, you had to work out whether it was genuine or not, and invariably it wasn't, actually, but this was a sort of little problem you would have. Discipline, generally speaking, you were punished simply by giving a bit of pack drill or something like that, and you didn't need to exert that. In Singapore, put on a president of a court martial who of a sepoy shot his the jemadar and he killed him, and so he was on court martial, and I happened to be the president of it, but I wasn't really looking forward to it one little bit, but he pleaded guilty, and so it saved me a lot of worry and trouble, and the sad thing was that he killed him, he was sentenced to death, and he was hung, actually, and I had to witness the hanging. But it's one of the hazards of the game, isn't it? But you didn't get a lot of that problem, actually. I think, look at it now, probably if somebody did that, they would have been classified as being, you know, mentally deranged or something like that. But he seemed all right, actually. He spoke quite openly and clearly and said why he'd shot him. I can't remember why it was now, actually. But he wasn't in my unit. I mean, he was just somewhere else. I can't remember where he came from. But that was one of the events in Singapore. So.
And how did they generally regard the Japanese?
The Indian? They didn't like the Japanese any more than the rest of us. There were a lot of Indians left in Burma when the Japanese took over. And they whipped them up into, because at the time, India was trying to obtain, under Gandhi and a few others, independences from the British, you see. So the Japanese whipped them up into what they call the Indian National Army in Burma, under a chap called Subhas Chandra Bose, who's everybody, we all the Indians, you know, and even Gandhi didn't have any time for him, so it shows what category of chap he was. But anyway, he whipped up these Indians left in Malaya, and probably some of the chaps that were taken prisoner from the Burma army by the Japanese when they were fighting to come out. And they actually came in with the invasion of the Japanese in 1944, they sent them in. They thought that that they would put them in against the Indian units who wouldn't fight against them, but they were very wrong there, because if they were fighting for the Japanese, they were baddies. So they didn't have any compunction about fighting against the fellow Indians in that were coming up against them. And really, they weren't any good as fighters. They were badly decimated and soon squashed. But the thing that grieved me about that was, and Bose himself was killed in a flying accident, flying from from Tokyo to Germany. Whether somebody shot him down or not, I don't know, but he was killed, so that was the end of him. But the part where they, in the Indian National Army, which was the southern part of the Imphal Plain, where their unit came, there's a museum, an Indian museum, and they've got photographs and no end of paraphernalia about this chap Bose, and saying what a clever chap he was and how he started the get out of India thing. And so I was with a tour party on that particular occasion, and the Indian guide was telling us all about this chap Bose. So I was very glad to be able to get up and counter what he was saying, what a disgrace he was, and he should never have been recognised. It was Nero that boosted him up, but none of the Indian soldiers had any time for him or any of the Indian National Army that came. So they did no good at all as far as trying to get India self-government. Of course, that came about, and it was always a sad thing to me that they split up India and Pakistan, because they got on all right for 100 years or so, and yet as soon as they get the chance for self-government, they want their own independence, and so it is. Was a sad thing, but I think 90% of the Indians would have been quite happy to have gone on. It was only when they were stirred up and, you know, it caused the trouble.
What were your own feelings towards the Japanese?
Very, very derogatory until we beat them. In a way, after Kohima, one couldn't help feeling a bit sorry for them, because they literally lived on nothing for weeks, and they fought tooth and nail, and they would fight themselves until their own death, and a colleague of mine, he saw a couple of Japs lying down. He thought they were injured, which they were. They'd been shot, and he went across to them, and then he thought, I'm not quite sure whether I'm going up to them or not. They saw him coming, and they didn't do anything. But then he didn't go up to them, because he wasn't quite sure whether they, because they had a nasty habit of letting off a grenade when you got here. And sure enough, he didn't go up to them, and he waited, and they eventually let the grenade off themselves. And so he would have had it if, but this was a thing they did. They'd kill themselves. They'd been indoctrinated that they must not surrender, and they wouldn't surrender. And this is why I said they seem to do what they're told willy nilly. And really, they were good fighters. You've got to give them that, and they put up with an awful lot. But until they surrendered, no, I had no time for them. I'm afraid it's their hierarchy, the controllers that are responsible, the same as in Germany, of course, before indoctrinating them with this, sort of habit of they must not give in to anybody, and if we tell you not to, you don't. And they would stick to that, and like the kamikaze, these planes that they would drop, fly the plane and right into and kill themselves and everybody else. I've had quite a few Japanese friends since, but you can't help feeling, there's something behind you that you don't understand, old chap, that you're not. I don't know that I would trust them. If they were told to do something, they would do it, you see, and I think they probably still would. But I don't know. I have no justification in saying that.
How do you view their strategy during the war, and tactics and
the Japanese so strategy? I suppose going to Pearl Harbor brought them into brought the Americans in, which was a good thing that the Americans came in. But it was a pretty typical Japanese strategy to go and bomb them somebody that, without them knowing it, and then they went into Singapore and very quickly dominated things there, because nobody thought that they would come in from the land. And way up through into Burma. No, their strategy was, I think, quite good, but a bit, you might say, not that I realized this at the time, but they would tend to be stereotyped. They would shout out at night, which was a stupid thing for them to do, but they would call out in supposed English, "Hello, Tommy," or something like that, you see. And you knew full well it wasn't who it was. And yet they would continue to do that, and their pattern would be the same, which was useful, because you knew what to expect. But having said that, They were certainly a brave fighter, and they would fight up to the up to the end, and before they would, and even when they were down, they would try to do you in before they went, or, you know, passed on.
And what about the British strategy and the competence of your own commanders?
I don't think we ever had any. We never had any doubt about the actual army commanders or the divisional commanders or the generals. Sometimes you'd think some of your immediate superiors not capable of doing what they're supposed to be doing, but I mean, you find that with everything, don't you? But generally speaking, general and above, everybody had great respect for them. Never had any moans and groans about they did their best under difficult conditions, there's no doubt about that. Mountbatten, when he came into the scene, he was very, very, very much respected, and I think quite justifiably so. Not necessarily as an army commander, but as getting things done. And he was the one that would take a chance, and I mean, in his position, which was used his position to get things done, whereas others might not have been able to have done so or not been willing to do so. But he would, and he was certainly respected. And same with Bill Slim. You couldn't have a word against Bill Slim. When the army were coming out, one my subedar major in my company, he came out with the Burma Army before he came to my unit, and he was with the transport company trying to come out of Burma, and they were stuck or at a crossroads where conditions were pretty difficult, and there was, you know, we didn't know which way to go. And he said, and the General Saab was there telling us which way to go. That was Bill Slim, actually. And that was him. The generals that we had, we were lucky. We had a good lot, and for the most part, they did their best, and they knew what they had and what they didn't have, and they made the best of it, actually. I know it was termed the forgotten army, but we accepted the fact that Europe needed all the essential goods and things, and what was left over came out to us. But mail used to take about 3 or 4 weeks to come out from the UK in the earlier days. Then eventually they brought it, don't know how they did it, but it came down to about a week, and which was very good, actually, to get, and that boosted morale considerably from British troops. But the mail, the Indian mail, we used to, that they would, I suppose, take 2 or 3 weeks to get a letter from their village. So really, a lot of the way from the village to a place of town where there's a post office would have been perhaps a 7-day walk, I think.
How do you now regard the war?
The war? A thing of the past, I think. I think it was essential to get Hitler out of the way, and he And I think it was good that that was done. You've got people who are trying to do their best, and then you've always get these awkward people who come into the world's control area and stir things up a bit. But generally speaking, I think the war, as it was started by Hitler and had to be to get him out of the way, at least it did that, and it's got Europe on a sounder footing, and sort of anyway. I'm not a common market man, I must admit.
And your own service, how do you view that?
Sorry?
Your own service during the war.
My service during the war. I was pleased to be able to do something. Both my brother and I were in it throughout the whole of the war, and he did his bit and I did mine. He was in Europe and I was in India, but I did a bit. I suppose it helped a bit, and that's that. It was quite an experience. As I used to say at the time, I didn't get to university because the war came along. But I think I had probably as good an education out there as I might well have had at the university, except it was a different type.
Was there any lasting physical or mental impact on you?
No, none at all. My hearing's pretty bad. That might well have been through too many bangs, but they do their best with that, with these things, which are not all that good. Mentally, no, I think probably I got more consideration for people, various types of people and various nationalities than I would have done. I think I probably am considerate to looking at other aspects of things apart from my own, and maybe that's a good thing. Try to think it is.
Would you mind just explaining how you came by the bits you're sending back to the museum?
Yes. I've already given some of the bits to the museum. Which should we forget those? They know all about those. I think I told him what they were. But all that I've got in this carrier bag of yours is a pair of Japanese flying boots, which I did explain those to Fergus, actually. I got them from a store, a Japanese store in Singapore, and heaven knows what I was doing in there, but I was helping myself to things that were available. So I got these Japanese flying boots, and I've used them quite not extensively, but from time to time, because they're very comfortable to wear, but I've finished with them now, and they're a bit tatty on the bottom, but anyway, so that's the flying boots, the other thing was that there was a sort of a rucksack type of thing, which I gave to Fergus, and I couldn't. He didn't know what it was for, and I didn't know what it was for. And I got that from the same place. But my son came up with it. He saw a picture of. He's got. I gave him one as well. Actually, it's a parachute pack. It's an empty pack for putting your parachute in. Now, obviously, got it from the same place as the flying boots. So that's the obvious answer. So could you tell Fergus that the bag is for parachute? Well, that's that one. And the other thing is my old jungle green hat, which I pushed that in the bag. Now, we didn't wear peak caps, you know, officer cap. We just wear the jungle cap, which you've probably seen, have you not? It's just an ordinary thing that doesn't matter. If it gets wet, it dries out and covers right out of your head, and you're camouflaged half the time anyway. So that's that. And the other was the other hat, so the Australian type hat, you remember, the big rimmed hat, which was ideal for keeping the water off. And I pushed it in there. Why I brought it back, I don't know. But anyway, that's one that it went, both these hat and the jungle hat. Well, the jungle hat didn't come initially. They were issued later. But the Aussie type hat I got right at the beginning, and that cut the rain off very extensively. What was the other thing? I did put a note with this. When I was in Singapore, I think we had, I can't remember what it was, we had a visit, I think, from the Maharaja of the Rajputana, of the unit was, and we had an official photographer came, and I can't remember what we were doing. I think we had some sports or something. Anyway, he took a film, and he sent me a couple of copies of the film, which he took, which only I think last about a couple of minutes each or something like that. There's 16 millimeter film, which nobody uses nowadays, but I put those in. I just put a note on as to what I thought they were. If they're of any good to anybody, you know, they might be and they might not be, but throw them away if they're not. I've never used them. I've got nothing to use them on anyway. But for what it's worth, I mean, it's not a sound film or anything like that. It's just a black and white film taken in Singapore of an Indian company, just activities that they were doing. And so I think that's about all that's in there, actually. I don't think there's anything else. No, the rest of it I dumped up when I last went up to see Ferguson. That's about all that's in there, I think. And so I can't really give you anything interesting about them other than that.